It is Locked On Jazz for the 8th of May. What would the game look like from the perspective of a player when we all come back? Some interesting insights from Matthew Dellavedova. We'll touch on that, plus the greatest games in Jazz history that have been forgotten from an old friend. It's all coming up on today's edition of Locked On Jazz. Pow! How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. This is Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz, giving you insight, expertise, geeky numbers, hopefully making it way more fun to be a Jazz fan each and every day. Thanks so much for tuning in. Thanks for staying with us. Thanks for making this a part of your day. Very much appreciate it. Love doing the show right now. It gives me a level of normalcy, and hopefully it does the same for you. I was on a panel yesterday with a company called Collective Eye with Scott O'Neill, the CEO of the 76ers, Matthew Dellavedova, Cleveland Cavaliers player. They put on these incredible events. They had the former head of the London Stock Exchange. They had Eric Schmidt of Google. They had Danny Meyer of created Shake Shack. And some reason they had me. So I know them. That's why. It wasn't because I'm that good. But anyway, I got the neat experience. And there were a bunch of notes in this I wanted to share with you I thought were amazing. Matthew Dellavedova and Scott O'Neill got into what they how they thought the game might be different when we got back, which was a question that a bunch of people have asked, and I've had no idea. So Matthew Dellavedova said he wondered whether teams would play more zone. Players might not be in as good a shape. Zone doesn't take as much effort. And they think shooting will be way off. Guys have not been able to take normal shots. Fatigue leads to less good shooting. Conditioning leads to less good shooting. Also, guys just haven't been taking the same amount of shots. So will there be a higher team of playing zone and forcing into shooting and seeing if teams can make shots? I thought that was super interesting. The other one he said was, will there be a bigger emphasis on quick shots and fast breaking? One, because of conditioning, and two, because if you're not getting very good, you know, you're not making shots in the half court and getting some of those opportunities, then maybe you're trying to push it a little bit to get some of these other looks quicker in the game. So that I thought was interesting. You know, it was clear from, he said he hopes they extend the field. It was clear to me that if we're going to actually bring back all 30 teams at some point in time, we probably have to do a play-in tournament. That John Hollinger of Hollinger and Duncan podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network usually releases every Monday. You can get it on iTunes and subscribe on iTunes, follow on Spotify, so you always get it. The Hollinger from the very beginning kind of brought up this idea of a 30-team playoff. I think he might have released it too early. I think people are going to forget. He might want to re-release it. Just talking to Matthew Dellavedova, if you're asking these guys to come back out, quarantine for a period of time, play, it sure felt like if you're going to do that, you better give them a play-in tournament, give them something to look forward to in the process. That to me, was clear. The most interesting thing that Matthew Dellavedova talked about, actually a guy by the name of Tad Martin asked him a question. Tad used to work at Overstock here in Salt Lake. That's the only reason I mentioned his name is his resume takes him back there. He asked him a question about playing with LeBron and playing with Giannis. And the most interesting thing that he said about playing with LeBron is you realize every single day that you are a part of his legacy and you are a part, you are a piece to him on his journey to being the greatest of all time. Like it's a, like we talk about this camaraderie and all these other things. You watch Jordan, you watch Kobe. Like, I thought it was really interesting perspective that you have no doubt as a player that what you are at this point is a cog in the machine that is driving LeBron to being remembered as the greatest of all time. And that's actually what your role and what your importance is that you're a piece of this that's going to allow him to be remembered as the greatest of all time. And there's an immense, immense pressure to that. I thought that was a really interesting insight. I had not sure I had heard an NBA player say that as clearly as he did in that interview. So that was, I thought that was really interesting. The other one that was worth noting with some comments from Scott O'Neill, the CEO of the 76ers, that China is 5 years ahead of us in technology on broadcasts. One of the comments he made was that if you're watching a Chinese broadcast, you can literally click on the screen on the actual shoes that someone's wearing and buy them. The other one there was a lot of conversation about was how, what can they do when we play without fans, with TV angles and TV cameras, to be able to give you, the fan, a perspective and a angle that you've never had before. So that in a sense, this could be a better broadcast, a better fan experience, because there's no limit to where you can put TV cameras. Now, I don't know exactly how you're going to, you know, if we're, and this could go on for a while, right? There could be a few years where we're at 25, 30% capacity in arenas. And so you're going to suddenly maybe be able to have a camera in a different spot, in a different angle, in a different place. Before they did talk, Adam Silver talked about with, I think it was on a Qualtrics podcast, actually, with Ryan Smith, about the idea of almost having like a Zoom screen on the side of the floor for during games, so that there was actually some feeling of fan interaction and players could see fans. I don't know if that'd be too weird. It'd certainly be a quantum jump for us. But anyway, I thought that was really, really interesting work there. By everybody, was fascinated beyond it. I brought very little value other than getting overly emotional about the idea of calling a game again with you back in the arena. I will tell you, in all honesty, that I think about that a lot. And the idea that one day we'll all be back in an arena together and have that shared experience really is an emotional moment for me when I think about that. We have a super special connection in Utah. We have a connection I don't think a lot of people know. Scott's wife is from here, so he does know and understand it. There's a bond that we have as fans in Utah that I think is different. I think our franchise is more important to our city than, you know, the 76ers are to Philadelphia, only because Philadelphia has, you know, years and years of history, as well as, you know, four other professional sports franchises. And, you know, the Constitution was signed there. Like there's a heart and soul to that city. It's a little bit of like how I feel like Seattle lost the Sonics. They lost something. They didn't lose that city has more to it. Right. We have a special, unique, element to it. So I will admit, I got quite emotional on the idea of sports coming back and us all being in the arena together and having that shared moment. It was a great experience. Thanks to the people over at Collective Eye for involving me, on that. Henry Abbott at True Hoop wrote a really interesting piece today on all the different things. That's just a great, there's a bunch of great kind of Substack things out there. Mike Prada has one, Tom Ziller has one, Henry Abbott has one, that are taking place right now on the NBA front. He shared about the various hurdles that the NBA would have. He shared the Epe Udo story. I might have to try to get in touch with Epe. So Epe Udo goes to China to go play. Jeremy Lin's there as well. He goes through tons of screening, hours of screening and testing when he gets there. He is then in a 2-week mandated quarantine in a dorm room. Like his agent called it a dorm room. There is literally a camera on the outside of his door that will notify them if he opens his door and leaves. Like, I don't know that this is legal or enforceable, wrote Henry Abbott, in the United States of America. Like, you know, he's not in a Grand America hotel room either. He's in a basic dorm room. I mean, this is, his career's at a point of time, but I'm not sure that we are at a point in which we can be asking our players to do that if that's what it takes. I thought that was quite a story there. By the way, there's also a lot of murmur around the NBA about Giannis to the Warriors, like just so we can start thinking free agency type stuff. And I will be honest with you and tell you that that's actually talked about a lot. That's not a quiet murmur that's out there. Interesting little note, lacrosse will play a 16-day quarantine tournament without fans. It seems like a non-story. NBC airs 20 games, seems like a non-story. July 25th to August 9th, who cares? Because here's where you care. The CEO of the league, former player, great player, might be current player, was quoted as saying, "We have been in enough contact with the CDC to know that we will comfortably have enough tests by July 25th and by that date for us to run this league for the 300 people that are involved." That's newsworthy, that they believe there'll be enough tests, because that hopefully means we have more tests across the country. But that's the key. The testing is the key to getting sports back out there in every way. Interesting two little notes on the NFL schedule. And then Tony Parks is going to join us. The old friend Tony Parks is going to stop by for a second. A little surprise here for you to go through the old games. I meant to mention that at the very beginning, but I forgot. Every week two opponent in the NFL schedule has the same bye week. And there are no divisional opponents in week three or week four playing each other. So if they had to move one week, they could very easily get rid of week two and have them all play their bye weeks. And if they had to eliminate it down to a 14-week schedule, they get rid of weeks three and four. Very, very well done by the NFL. All right. We've been doing greatest games in Jazz history all week. Tony Parks is kind of a savant on all of the things he remembers about the Jazz, so I thought I'd have him come aboard and join us and talk about forgotten great games in Jazz history. We'll do that as we continue. Today's show is brought to you by Built Bar. BuiltBar.com. What an incredible reaction we're getting from everybody who's trying Built Bar for the first time. Thanks to all the people who've emailed me about it. The great tasting energy bar. It's rebuilding what you expect out of bars. That's the way I would say it. I think that's the best way to talk about it. Built Bar, with their amazing flavors, has this marshmallowy, incredible texture. Probably feels more like a candy bar. Same time, only 110 calories, 15 grams of protein, and just 4 grams of sugar. That's the mocha chocolate cream bar, the mint chocolate cream bar. Both those have come out of retirement, out of demand. Yesterday, I had the double chocolate mousse. That's probably my favorite so far, with 100% real chocolate. 110 calories, 15 grams of proteins, 4 grams of sugar. Think about that for a second. If you go get a Clif Bar, instead of 110 grams of or calorie, 110 calories, it's 250. Your carbs are 38 instead of 5. Your sugar's 21. Built Bar's just 4. Like, it's way healthier. It tastes better, and it's there for you. BuiltBar.com. Use the promo code LOCKEDON. Build your own box and get $10 off your box. I went through the experience because it is the best customer experience I've had as well. They're attentive. They're telling me everything along the way. They've made contacts. They're letting me know. Super impressive all the way around. Tip of the hat to the Utah company, Built Bar. BuiltBar.com/LockedOn. Wrapping up our two-week series of the greatest games in Jazz history, and Tony Parks was a huge part of helping me out on this by sending me a list of like 40 games. We've looked at, gone back, we started back in 84 when the Jazz beat the Nuggets in the playoff series. We looked at 89, Stockton's win over the Bulls when they went length of the floor. We looked at the 92 triple overtime win over the Bulls. Jordan getting kicked out, the two amazing Stockton plays, the shot, and then his close to game 4 against the Bulls. Boozer's game 7 against the Rockets. We were going to get to the miracle in Miami today with Paul Millsap, but I thought it'd be more fun to bring our good friend Tony Parks on and have him kind of run through some of the games that we have forgotten. Some great Jazz games. Tony's got an unbelievable memory, and he's also kind of a historian on this. First off, how are you?
Yeah, I'm doing fine. Thanks so much for having me on, man. This is, I've listened to your podcast since day number one, and happy to be a part of this, man, and glad to be a part of this project.
All right, so you were really helpful in this, so I thank you. But like, when you think there's the list, like, I wasn't anything creative in that. Like, the 10, if we all kick the 10 games, they're kind of similar. Travis Henderson does a great job, and we do Jazz throwbacks and we play those games back. Take me through, let's kind of run through and start through some of those that we forget about. Like, what are the games that, like, when you think about, you know, this is one that, and I'm sure you got 5 or 6, and we'll run through them. What's one that comes to mind when you start thinking about games that people maybe don't remember or have a particular relevance that jumps out to you?
Yeah, like, some of the hidden gems that I definitely have jump out at me, like game 4 of 94 when the Jazz beat the Spurs. The Jazz are down in the fourth quarter, and I love that, like, Stockton put together what I thought was like the best 8 minutes I've ever seen him play at the end of that game. It was crazy and wild. Defensive steals, you know, making buckets, an assist. I think he had some crazy number of assists, double-digit number, just in the last 8 to 10 minutes, you know, stuff like that. And then earlier in that series, when they shut down the Spurs, because the Spurs beat them in game one, and they kind of got going with their offense, and then the Jazz, like, lock it down and shut them out for without a field goal and without a certain amount of points for just a crazy span of time. They were without a field goal for, like, over a quarter's worth of time. It was nuts, you know? Like stuff like that always jumps out to me, and I think of those because they had – big relevance. The Nick Van Exel play game two of 97 Jazz Lakers.
Yeah, let me jump back to that Spurs series for a second before we that's the year before that's not the Madonna year, right? The Madonna year is during it takes us to 96 or 97 or 98 with the finals in London,
that was
right?
That was the Madonna was there, I want to say, with that San Antonio series.
Oh, I thought I thought the Dennis Rodman Madonna year was the year on the way to the NBA Finals. But maybe
you could be right. I remember
Rodman's on that team, so you're right about that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they
I'm trying to recall for sure on that. Yeah.
They smoked the Jazz in that first game of that series. 106, this is in 94, by the way, 106-89, mm-hmm. And it's a 5-4 series, so pretty high-level panic. And what I actually remember about that is that Stockton was, frankly, awful in game one. And if there's anything the opposite of what I remember when you go back through these games is how incredibly the amount of clutch moments that John has is just insane. Like, there was another one. Oh, I was rewatching game six of the NBA Finals last night. And, like, you know, everyone talks about Jordan's shot and Jordan's steal and Malone. The possession before is Stockton's three that puts the Jazz in position to win that game. Like, John has so many amazing moments in the kind of clutch moments. So I do recall that Spurs series where he was not very good in the first game, obviously bounced back. They won it in four. All right. You can move us. You can move us to your next one. there's probably another game that year we should be talking about that's been forgotten, which is the game seven win over Denver in 94.
Mm-hmm.
If I might have that right, the Denver is the upstart who has surprised they're the eight seed that beat the one seed that year. And then they forced the Jazz to seven. So that's kind of another one. Malone was unbelievable in that game seven. I think he had 31-15 or something crazy like that. So that's probably one way that year we should
mention. Well, and they got off to a bad start on offense, if I remember right, in that game seven. And that was kind of an eerie, weird thing because people were starting to become concerned about that part of the Jazz, and then they got off to a tough start offensively and then thankfully finished them off. And then that Nuggets team, crazily was the first team to ever go down 3-0 and then tie it 3-3 since like the 51 Knicks or something crazy. That was a fragile game. And then the Jazz took off on them. And so, that one in 94.
That's
certainly
right.
Memorable. go ahead.
That's right, because that's the game four where the Jazz really have the series swept and they kick it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't remember all the details on it, but I do remember they had it. They were in total. They just kicked it late. And next thing you knew, they were into a game seven, which, you know, certainly hurt them by the time they got to the conference finals. Though I do remember, I think Houston went seven with Phoenix that year also. So there was an arrest. All right. We're getting derailed. All right. Back to focus, Tony. What do you got for another one?
Well, I'll go 95. People forget, you know, they always remember the game five situation losing to Houston, and that team was a 60-win team and all that. But what was so crazy, David, I don't think I can ever remember a first round series that had Western Conference final like feel than 95 Jazz Rockets. It was a 3-6 series. It was weird. The Jazz were a 60-win team. They were really the two, but because they didn't win their division, they were the three seed. And the Rockets were defending champs, and they were healthy again, and everybody knew that they could win it as a six. And when you talk clutch plays by John Stockton, Stockton's game layup at the end of game one of that series, which felt so incredibly big. And I know they didn't go on to win that series, but I just felt like that moment it was kind of one of the first times where instead of the Jazz being a cute team that might be able to go deep, you felt like this team could actually win the whole thing. And so that was one that always jumped out to me.
I don't the Jazz win that game. I happen to know this because I looked it up recently because I was in a conversation about Olajuwon. Do you have any, I don't know why you'd remember this. Olajuwon's game one line. You ready for this?
Okay.
20 of 30 from the field. 45 points, 8 rebounds, 6 assists, 2 steals, and 3 blocks.
Yeah, he was okay. That guy was all right.
I mean, without Michael in the league, he was the best player in the world at that point.
Oh, man. Yeah, no, that guy was insane. That guy was just insane. And in that game, what was tough about game 5 of that series and losing that series, David, was that the Jazz were, I want to say, up 12 at some point in that fourth quarter. And we all know Benoit had the chances to make the shot for the three-pointers. You just felt like they were one punch away. And all of a sudden, Houston just had this insane ability to get to the free throw line. And I forget what the number is. It's something crazy. I'd have to look up like the play-by-play chart to see it. But an insane number of their final possessions were at the free throw line. And the one field goal they hit was a Olajuwon fadeaway baseline. They did everything perfect on defense. Fading away, baseline, no angle. And it hits the top left corner of the backboard, goes straight down and in. And I could not believe it. How frustrating.
For those who remember Jazz history, part of that story is that the Jazz really had a championship caliber team. And if I recall the years correctly, Felton Spencer tears his Achilles tendon that year. And so the Jazz end up with James Donaldson as their starting center for the playoffs to have to battle Olajuwon. It was the matchup the Jazz couldn't afford to have. They had lost Felton Spencer, who really was a pretty good player. He wasn't, but he could handle. He was big and 7 feet, and he could handle Olajuwon. And then by the end of that series, you're right, they lived at the line. They took 48 free throws in that game 5.
Yeah, certainly tough. No two ways about that. 96, the one game that, people remember the series where they lose to Seattle in 7. First time they ever made it to June. I mean, there was so much happening. But that game 5 really reminded me so much about just the toughness and the character of those teams. I mean, they got down in that game. Things weren't really going the way it looked like it was going to be a rout maybe again by Seattle. And then there's this crazy moment at the end of game 5, David, or at the end of the third quarter. Karl Malone, pump fakes, draws a foul at the very end of the quarter. The referee blows the whistle and then hesitates and then just waves it off. That's it. Quarter's over. That's it. Cherry Sloan goes ballistic, slams his hand on the scorer's table. I mean, his tie's flying all over the place. Carl's ticked off. It gets real chippy. They bang Jerry Sloan with a technical foul. So you're like, oh, man, every point means the world in this game. Now it's tight at the end of the third. The officials come together, change the call to a shooting foul, 2 shots, he had a foot on the line, and then rescind the technical foul on Jerry Sloan. I could not believe it. Carl makes 1 of 2 of the free throws, but it's essentially a 2-point swing if Seattle gets the free throw and makes it. So those 2 points were so big. Carl then strips Sean Kemp at the very end of regulation in a very tight play, and then they go on to win in overtime. And then they blast him in game 6. So when game 7 hit and the Jazz actually got off to a pretty good start, you started to think, oh my gosh, this team at one point looked like they were, no shot to win the series. And now they're on the brink of going to the finals. And so that game 5 always reminded me of some of the toughness and character and heart of what those Jazz teams were.
Friend of the program, Tony Parks with us, running back through the great games of Jazz history. Today's show is brought to you by Grip6.com, a Utah company that's got a belt company that's just absolutely fabulous. In fact, I ordered a new pack, 2-pack builder yesterday with some of the great new ultralight setups for you. Go to grip6.com and under men's, click on the ultralight series. They are good looking and solid. The great thing about Grip 6 is the belt and the buckle are interchangeable. So the strap and the buckle interchangeable, which means you buy a two-pack, you end up with four belts out of it, really. And the new ultralight buckles are super nice looking. I got a brand new one. I got the Horizon Granite belt. I also liked the vertical gunmetal belt, so that's why I did a two-pack, so I could get both of those. I got a blue strap and a new gray strap to go with my black and my brown, so now I'm all set. I've got four buckles, four straps. I got, like, I can't even do the math. It's like 16 belts out of it. It's an amazing deal. The new ultralights are really, really cool. You have no holes, no loops, no flappy things. They fit whole. It's the whole patented setup, and the ultralight is super nice. The other side of this thing is they have the new work belt, which if you're doing a bunch of work, have a work belt on it, holds you, also good for concealed carry. Grip 6 is really evolving into some cool stuff, so check it all out. Go to grip6.com. On your way out, if you can do me a favor when you check out with your new two-pack, put in the comments Locked On Jazz. We don't have any special deal for you because, frankly, the deal at grip6.com is so good already for you that you get 20% off the two-pack builder, so make sure you just put in the comments that you like us over at Locked On Jazz. Today's show is also brought to you by Blinkist. This one's right up Tony Parks with this incredible memory. Blinkist is really unique. It works on your phone, your tablet, your web browser. What is it? It takes the need-to-know information of thousands of nonfiction books and condenses them down into just 15 minutes that you can read or listen to. So, Motivate by Daniel Pink, Habit, a few of those I've listened to recently, trying to figure out various things. There's The 4-Hour Workweek by Tim Ferriss, which I thought would be fun, but I didn't want to read the whole thing, so I went to Blinkist and got it done. Go to Blinkist.com/NBA. Try it for 7 days for free and save 25% on your new subscription. That's Blinkist.com/NBA. Secrets of the Power of Negotiation, Jeff Benedict's book about Tiger Woods, How Champions Think in Sports by Dr. Bob Rotella, which is a really, really good one. A lot of super books out there. Sports Gene by David Epstein. I'll actually probably read that whole book because I want to, but there's numerous others that, like, you know what? I'm not going to invest the month because I read slow. I'm going to invest the 15 minutes through Blinkist. Download the app today. Go to Blinkist.com/NBA to start your 7-day free trial. Tony Parks with us.
Courage to be disliked, by the way, ooh, one of my absolute favorites. I have Blinkist. Oh, I love it.
You should
absolutely love it.
I hope you used Blinkist.com/NBA so that you got a discount.
I will do that from now on. Yeah.
Yes. It's a good thing. Cancel your subscription and resubscribe. I didn't say that.
That's a lot to do.
All right. Where are you taking us next, Tony?
I think, you know, one of my favorite games was 97, the Jazz, they're in game two against the Lakers, round two. And in game one, real quick, a weird moment in game one, it's this weird afternoon game, end of the third quarter. I don't know if you remember I never knew his name, the doctor, the Jazz fan that sat right
Dr.
behind
Dr. Anderson.
So there's a moment at the end of the third quarter, Nick Van Exel's driving the ball down the court. The game clock is winding down for the quarter. He brought a saxophone to the game and put together a note that sounded exactly like the buzzer. Exactly like the buzzer. He played it before the actual buzzer went off. Nick Van Exel shot the ball too soon, missed, and the Jazz, like, they didn't replay it. They didn't have any, like, call for it. The security crew just took the saxophone away. So, essentially, he had a very big defensive stop at the end of a quarter, which I thought was very, very bizarre. And talk about a different time when they're like, yep, we'll just take this away. No problem. Like, are you serious? You got to stay in the game. But the next game, yeah, the Jazz are in a tooth and nail battle. I mean, that series, man, the Lakers really pushed the Jazz in two of those three games that were in Salt Lake. And we all remember the Kobe Bryant buzzer or the air balls in game five. But in game two, man, the Lakers were right there. And Antoine Carr hits a couple of free throws. I think they're his only points to the game. At the end of the game, and those who claim that the Jazz never get any calls, the ball goes into Nick Van Exel. Van Exel has it, and Karl Malone absolutely just chops him, just completely chops him. Fouls him to no end on a three-point shot. They don't call anything, and the Jazz win by two. That one to me was like, wow, because if that young Laker team that was kind of hungry and learning how to win, if they win that game, David, they were starting to play some really good ball there. And all of a sudden, that series could have been a lot more dangerous than people think.
Wasn't there even one before that? If I recall that game, gosh, I'm going back. I mean, I covered this, right? So we're into, I don't have great memory.
Yeah.
But I was covering the team at the time. So if I remember correctly, it's like, it's Brian Russell hits a three and we're up six. And it is almost one of the most colossal collapses. Like, it is the, we haven't proven anything entirely yet, right? We haven't beat the Rockets. We've lost in, we kind of collapsed in game seven in Seattle. And I remember feeling like, gosh, this group just, and I was talk show host, bombastic, terrible, saying things I shouldn't say. But I also remember that there were, and I don't remember the circumstances, and maybe you can, there were two calls in that one, if I remember correctly. So somehow Antoine Carr ends up at the free throw line to win that game with 2 seconds left before Malone hacks Van Exel. And both the calls, if I remember correctly, are not very good.
Yeah, the Van Exel one I remember for sure. The Carr one, you might be right. You might be right. Maybe
we
that
were,
one was also
we
a,
as a,
stage, a poor call.
As a fan base, my memory is we were not at the stage where the post-game host was allowed to say that we just got a gift and that was a terrible call. And I said that, and I remember that that wasn't quite allowed. I'll have to, I don't know if you've checked out the YouTube site, Jazz Basketball One, and I don't know who Jazz Basketball One is on YouTube, but I have spent more time on his site or her site.
Oh, yeah.
They got great stuff. So I'm sure he or she has a 15-minute recap of that game. I've watched 15-minute recaps of more Jazz games due to Jazz Basketball One during this period of time. It's been awesome. So hat tip to them. All right, give me the next one.
All right, so I've always said this.
We got time for this and one more. So give me your two best ones. We'll
okay.
do it again sometime.
All right, so we go with in 1997. Like, everybody remembers, you know, the game six and the victory and all of that stuff. But my goodness, man, the performance there in game five of that 97 year, I thought was incredible. But the other thing I wanted to get to was everybody remembers game four of the finals, right? The Stockton loan pass, all that stuff. What was really bizarre was the Jazz had this weird NBC Sunday curse, and I couldn't figure it out. It was like 4 out of 5 times they had played on Sunday on NBC, they lost by a buzzer beater, right? Like game one, Jordan, I'm going backwards here. Game three of the Western, or game four of the Western Conference Finals, Eddie Johnson hit a three-pointer that was absolutely nuts. And then you have,
by the way,
Shaq,
you watch
with a
Jazz basketball. You watch
Gary Payton.
Have you watched Jeremiah Jensen's feed where he's done all these things? Like, Eddie Johnson must have hit more shots against us than any person ever.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. It's insane. It absolutely drove me nuts. And so when he shot that shot, you knew it was going in. I mean, it drove me crazy watching that kind of stuff. So there was a weird thing there, and then it just felt like the Jazz were going to lose that game, and Stockton obviously willed them to come back. I think one of my favorites that I've always loved in terms of regular season, I don't know if you ever knew this game, Rodney Rogers hits 3 consecutive three-pointers, erasing what was an 8-point lead. The Jazz were up 8. This is a random regular season game in 94. The Jazz are up 8. Jeff Malone, the Jazz are in control. There's like 25 seconds left. Rodney Rogers hits a 3. They steal it. They give it back to him. He hits another 3. They steal it again, give it back to him, and he hits another 3 to take a 1-point lead. And then after that, Jeff Malone hits the game winner, and thankfully the Jazz escaped with what would have been maybe the greatest blown lead in the last 20 seconds of a game ever. Like, ever. So that one always stood out to me in terms of, like, regular season games.
All right, Tony Parks, give us your last one.
Last one that I think gets forgotten, the Jazz in 99, people just remember that they lost in the second round. But for most of that year, the lockout shortened year, they looked like the only team that would win the title.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
It didn't look like anybody was really in their way. The Spurs were awful to start the year. And so the Jazz were just cruising. And suddenly, then we know that the Spurs and the Blazers started to play at a better level. But when the Jazz got in this first round series, John Stockton and company found themselves down, and it looked like they were about to get beat against the Sacramento Kings. And John Stockton hits a game-winning jump shot with about 0.7 left to save the day, and you were just hoping that Jazz team could find a way to kind of get back to championship level, kind of with maybe a reset of focus if they won that series as they did in five. The other thing that people forget about that game was the Kings throw the ball into Jason Williams, who catches it with 0.7. He, like, caught it, turned, dribbled, faked, shot it, and somehow got it off on time, missed it, and while the Jazz are celebrating the win, Jerry Sloan's freaking out that the clock didn't start on time, and he was absolutely beside himself about that. But those are some of the best memories. I mean, clearly several other games that I know you and I could go on with forever, but those are some of the forgotten gems that I think have to be remembered when we talk about the great games in Jazz history.
Well, Tony, I enjoyed this, so I don't know whether, I'll look at the data because that's what I do. No, we'll do this again. This has been fun. There's okay. Other games. Your memory of these are amazing. They spark conversations. I have bad memory. You have good memory, so it's a good combination, yet I've lived through I hate to admit how many years I've been involved in Jazz broadcast. The crazy one the other day I'll share with you is I was watching the Sonics Jazz game 5 playoff series. Jazz are heavily favored. So it's got to be the 09-10 season. Is that right? I think, no, that's Nuggets Lakers. No, and I'm back by then. So it is the, it's the, might be the.
Oh, 2000.
So it might be 2000. Yeah. So Sonic, I'm watching the highlights of that series. I think Jeremiah Jensen had it up. And I'm watching this and I'm thinking to myself, like, that's strange. Like, oh yeah, there's Chuck Person. I remember that. Like Brent Berry, Shimon Williams. All of a sudden I realized, oh, I was on the Sonics broadcast staff for that game. Like, I was like, now wonder I don't, like, Olden Polonese was making all these plays. I was like, I don't really remember covering Olden Polonese. Like, that's weird. And I was like, oh, I do remember all of these other aspects. Like, that series was crazy because if I remember correctly, Karl Malone has psyched out Vin Baker so badly that they don't start Vin. Paul Westphal benches Vin Baker in one of the games.
Yeah. It was wild. Karl had 50 in game one. You're right about Vin Baker. Vin Baker was kind of the Chuck Knoblauch in a weird way. Like, you knew he was capable of being better, and you thought he might kind of get it back. But he really took a bizarre twist in terms of, I know, depression and things like that. But that was
alcohol around than depression, I think. If you actually want to, or they related. But if you actually, interestingly enough, I didn't mean to do this, but perfect segue, Rejecting the Screen, one of our, you would love that podcast, Tony. They do some really interesting deep dives, had some really great conversation with Adam Morrison recently, who shared some insight on Kobe. But they just did Vin Baker this week. So Rejecting the Screen has Vin Baker on this week telling his kind of life story. It's a pretty amazing interview. Man. So feel free to check that out. All right, Tony Parks, we hope you're well. How does everybody get a hold of you these days, Tony?
Hey, find me right there on Twitter at TonyParks801. Also Instagram, TonyParks801. As well, even doing some fun stuff with TikTok here soon. Same kind of handle, all of that, and then
I don't
the Tony
need to
Parks
see
podcast
you on TikTok.
Will start on Monday. So
I
gotta
be honest, Tony. I don't know if I need to see you on TikTok.
Well, you're not gonna see me. Just fun videos like the voiceover, the Marv Albert video I just did the other day, that kind of stuff.
All right.
You know,
I didn't need to see you dancing. That's
And then the Tony Parks podcast Monday. We start with that. You find it on Stitcher, iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, and more. Going to have a lot of fun. So thanks for having me on today, man. This was a lot of fun. It was great to go down memory lane with you.
Thank you, Tony. Best of luck. Stay safe. Stay healthy. We'll talk to you soon.
Right back at you.
That is Tony Parks. Now tell your smart device to play the most recent episode of podcast Rejecting the Screen.